You're listening to South Florida's good news station, WCNO Palm City.
The following is a paid program. The content is provided by HF Martech. WCNO, its staff, management, and ownership are not responsible for the content.
When I die and I lay me to rest, gonna go to the place that's the best. When I lay me down to die, going up to the spirit in the sky. Going up to the spirit in the sky. That's where I'm gonna go.
Investment involves risk. Prior to making any investment, an investor should meet suitability requirements. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future performance. Neither the opinions expressed nor the information provided constitutes a recommendation to purchase or provide investment advice. The material presented is not a substitute for obtaining professional advice from a qualified person or firm. Securities offered through Centaurus Financial, member FINRA, and SIPC. And now, the host of the Team Markev program, Joe Markev.
Does anybody listen here regularly know about Alan Love? He's our messy Jew converted. Now, I say messy Jew. Those of you that don't know, I pick on Alan, but he's a messianic Jew, which means he was a card-carrying Jew, and he still is. But he converted to Christianity when, Alan?
July 18th of 2009.
And then, Alan has provided us with much knowledge because he's a retired prosecuting attorney from Wisconsin. But he has also provided us with some unsolicited information that has made us happy.
He's made us laugh.
I'm trying to be kind.
I don't know happy, but he's made us laugh.
When you laugh, you're normally happy. And the latest one, and this is the best one, he's driving down the street, and one of the barrels that guides you so you don't run over the people working construction or run into a hole attacked his car. But it missed his car, but it hit his mirror on the side of his driver's side. So now he's going to go see the county commission or the city of, and let's just give odds that he's going to collect. What do you think, Alan?
Well, he's not going to comment on
his
own case.
I'm not going to comment on that because I can't comment on pending litigation.
1-888-221-8990. This is the Team Martech Hour, and this is Joe Martech sitting with me today. Not only is Alan Love special guest member, but Vince Rizzino, CPA. And boy, we got big news because this is a new year.
Yes.
Taxes between now and April.
Well, big news is that they're not starting the filing season this year till January 28th.
What's that mean?
That means you can't file any tax returns before then.
Is that right?
That's right.
That's because
of the temporary shutdown.
Gotcha.
Which has caused a little bit of a
consternation.
Yeah, consternation. They're not ready. But the better news is that then they're processing refunds, so it's not going to hold up refunds for people.
Wait a minute. How do you get a refund if you don't
file? Well, for those that have amended returns in there, or they're just
from before.
Okay, or the 17.
Okay. I'm just going to say, I like this system.
Just give me the refund. Give me the refund. I don't have to file a return.
When you guys gear up.
Yeah.
Show me your tax return.
Give me the money now.
Really? Yeah, give me the money now. Yeah. Trust me later. Yeah, boy, exactly. I heard that one before.
Yeah.
Anyway, folks, this is important. You write this phone number down, 888-221-8990. 888-221-8990. Joe Martek, financial advisor. Greg Fasula, attorney. Dan Warren, independent insurance agent. Big word, independent. Mike Polis, mortgage broker. Victoria Lloyd, Remax of Stewart. And Vince Rosino, CPA, started doing his radio shows, not the whole group at the same time, but back in, this is our 15th year.
Wow.
That's
amazing.
I didn't know anybody lived that long. You know, but you remember when you were 15 years old?
Yes, I do.
Do you?
I remember.
Would you get beat up regularly? Or?
No, I was making money as a paper boy back then.
Yeah?
Yeah. I remember those years well. That was a very nice 4 years of my life.
I will tell you right now, when I remember vividly working on that milk truck in January in Detroit. This was not a pretty picture.
Yeah, well, we had some pretty serious winters up there in New York.
Well, I know you did. But, you know, this was when the trucks back then were not like the trucks are now. There's no heater back in there. So we had blankets, literally, covering cases of milk. Mm. You know, so it didn't freeze before you delivered it. So you'd load the truck up like at 3 in the morning, and then by noon you were done. But between then and then, it could be 10 below zero, and milk didn't like that.
My paper route was a little over a mile away from the depot where I picked up those papers. And when we had, like, winters with snow, what we did? We took out a sled.
Yeah,
put a bucket on it. And we loaded it with the papers, and we pulled it all the way up the hill and delivered the papers. Couldn't do it anyway. Couldn't ride your bike.
Yeah.
So we had some fun times. And that's Sunday morning at 4:30 in the morning.
Especially with the papers when they were 3 inches thick.
Yeah, Sunday papers were thick. Yeah.
New York Times?
No, Long Island Press.
Oh, that was skinnier.
Not as big as the Times, but it was a thick paper because they had a lot of advertisements back then.
Sundays, that was the big day for the Saturday and Sunday, big days for the ads, right?
Oh yeah.
1-888, you know, it's still to this day. I don't know how it is in your house, but tell me in your house. I get the Sunday paper. What do the women want to see? The ads.
Yeah, of course.
That's it.
Yeah.
Forget all the news. Who killed who? We don't care. You know, who's gonna it's not important. What's at Macy's? What sale we got going on now? Look what Bell's is doing. I'm going to save you a fortune. I said, wait a minute. If you don't go at all, you'll save me a fortune.
But needs are needs, Joe.
So the concept of the group, very simply, we've got around 200 years of combined experience in our group, which, you know, Dan, if he was here, would say one of the perks of experiences mean we've made a lot of mistakes. In life, you learn by your mistakes, and when you get old, you're supposed to make less and less, and then you can impart that information and knowledge on people that come along. So our job here, quite honestly, is to help you and to answer questions that you may have regarding your money, whether it's insurance, legal, real estate, mortgages, and Vince, taxes, which I had a dream last night. It wasn't a nightmare about you. Of course, it was close. But question now. The new tax code.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'm a husband and wife, and I make, let's just use $50,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
We have standard deductions now, right?
Yes, sir.
How much are those?
Married jointly, $24,000.
Each or total?
No, in total.
Okay.
Up from $12,600 from the year prior under the old law. So they expand nearly doubled the standard
deduction. Right now that means the first $24,000 is exempt and
no. Doesn't mean that at all.
How's it mean?
It means that is a deduction against all of your other income.
Okay, so now I've got only a job, the two of us. We make our $50,000 a year, and they're withholding taxes and Medicare and et cetera. So I'm ending up with, let's say, $35,000 or $40,000 in my pocket for the year, probably, because they're not going to hold too much for taxes. But Medicare, about 10%, wouldn't you say?
Well, in that bracket, it would be about 10% after the deduction for the standard. So let's say you earn $50,000, take $24,000 off it for standard. You're left with $26,000, which would be the taxable amount.
Okay.
I'd say 10% would give you $2,600. And then that would be compared to what was withheld from your pay to see if you overpaid or underpaid.
So then what happens is, you'll calculate how much you paid in was withheld. But let's just say it was $2,600. If I paid in $3,000, I have a refund.
You get a refund of $400. If you paid in $2,000, then you would owe $600.
Now that's just taking standard deductions. There's nothing itemized.
Correct. You'd have to have more than the $24,000 combined of other items that you'd normally itemize, like, for example, real estate taxes, mortgage interest, contributions to charities, They've eliminated a lot of things, and they've capped a lot of things. For example, it doesn't apply to here in Florida, but there's a cap on state and local tax deductions of $10,000. Doesn't mean anything to us here because most people are not there.
Here, right?
But if you're in Northeast somewhere or you have relatives that are, they're going to get, you know, going to get hurt by that. But also, there's limitations now on in mortgage, for example, mortgage interest, only up to $750,000 of mortgage debt.
It's not the interest.
It's not the interest, it's the debt.
Right. So if I've got a mortgage of $750,000, that, whatever the interest is on that mortgage, is now deductible for a homeowner, for my primary residence.
Correct. They change the rules on lines of credit, too, with the home equity lines.
Right.
Unless they're used for purposes of ownership equity, for example, putting the money into the house.
Put a new kitchen or whatever.
Acquisition or additional debt for the house. You don't get to deduct the interest.
So if I just took the money out and spent it on a trip
to around the world, you took out a $50,000 home equity to go around the world?
Even though it's on my primary residence.
Even though it's on your primary residence.
No deduction.
Not deductible.
Unless I took a kitchen with me.
That's right. Well, no. You can't take the kitchen with you.
No. Well, we could be like Alan and run over barrels, you know, and consider they jumped out at me, and that's not his fault. But that's
if
okay.
You wanted to be like me, you wouldn't take the kitchen; you'd take the bathroom.
Yeah, there you go.
Very good. To the chili story. Yeah. We're going to skip that story.
Now, there's something else, Joe, very important that they've eliminated under the new law, which is what we call miscellaneous itemized deductions. You know, those are things like if you're an employee and you paid something on behalf of your employer out of your own pocket.
Right.
You used to be able to itemize those things. Take off 10% of your income as you have to eat that part, and then the excess you'd get to deduct. No more. So you don't get any more miscellaneous itemized deductions.
Now, the only thing is this, then, is don't make sure you get reimbursed for these expenses. Don't pay them out of pocket,
right. and then look to deduct them on your tax return, because you won't be able to do that. So that, and also things like, and this is right up your alley, Joe, investment fees, brokerage fees, are no longer deductible.
No kidding. That's exciting. That'll make people happy.
Yeah, so people have large portfolios.
Can you forget that part? Because now nobody's going to want to pay me.
Well, they're going to find out one way or the other.
After the fact, right?
Yeah, after the fact.
Okay, well, stay with me on that thought for just a minute. So let's say I'm a realtor, and I make $100,000 gross commissions this year, but I drive my car, and I tote people around, I take them to lunch, business expense. Mm-hmm. How does that work now?
Well, of course, if you're not incorporated,
right?
So if you
as an individual,
if you're an individual, you'd be filing a Schedule C. Now, what's happened there is they've changed the rules with a couple of major things, like meals and entertainment, for example. No more. You could still take a business meal. So if you take a client out for a business meal and you document your discussions with the client or whatever prospect, they're still deductible. But you can no longer deduct, you know, half your tickets to the Dolphins, a box at Dolphin Stadium.
So if I have my tickets and I buy and I take you as a, and you're a client of mine, and the tickets cost me $100 a piece, I can't deduct yours. Is that what you're saying?
No, you cannot deduct anything towards the purchase price of those tickets. Now,
I am not taking you anymore.
You never took me in the first place.
Well, I'm not missing anything.
But here's the thing, though, Joe. If you do have a corporate box or something like that, you'd want to probably, say they serve food, what you'd want to do is break out the food portion from the box rental fee or whatever they call it, and then you'd be able to deduct the food costs if they itemize it specifically on an invoice.
So, in other words, rather than a ticket price, which you can't do, let's just say I rent a box on an annual from Joe Robbie Stadium, used to be Joe Robbie's, not anymore, and it cost me $10,000 a year. Now, if I'm doing that, probably I got a corporation and I missed a business expense. I mean, that would be more likely, right?
It'd be rare that an individual would spend that kind of money, but it can happen. I just don't see that usually in my practice.
No.
Well, but like I said, if you're spending $10, but the stadium breaks out, well, it's $8,000 for the ticket and it's $2,000 for the food in the box. Then that's a different story.
So all I could do is get the $2,000 but I couldn't get the other eight.
You can get the other eight. And the two would be subject to the 50% rule anyway, so you get 50% of it.
So now I take you out to lunch, and you're a client, and I spend $100 for lunch. Is that all deductible?
50% of it, as usual.
50%.
It's only 50. Always been. It's been 50% for years.
Even if I ate nothing.
Even if you ate nothing.
50%. This is not fair, is it?
Joe, you got to be practical about it. If you have a bill that says only one person was served and that person was, but how do you prove who that you served?
Well, on an audit, if I go in and they see my belly, they'll say, you did not skip a meal.
You know what? If they looked at you, Joe, you would get no meals in entertainment because it was all of you.
Thanks so much, Vince. I feel better now.
Vince, let's talk a little bit about Schedule D.
Schedule D. Oh,
yes. That's the capital gains schedule. Have they changed any rules regarding loss carry forward?
Yes, sir. I'm glad you asked.
I don't like this answer coming, do I?
Well, you know, capital losses are never carried back, ever. Even under the old law, you couldn't carry back losses, capital losses. There's a difference between a capital loss, let's say, and an operating loss, right, which we'll talk about that separate. But in a capital loss, you can't carry back. So if you have a capital loss this year, you had capital gains in a prior year, you can't go back and claim it. But you could carry them forward for an indefinite period of time. So
Still. $3,000 a year?
The losses are capped at $3,000. So let's say this year you had a $10,000 capital loss. The max you could take would be $3,000 over and above your capital gains for the year. So let's say you had 2,000 gains, you had 10,000 losses.
Okay.
Well, you could use 2,000 of the 10 to offset that too.
Got it.
And then you could take 3 of the remaining 8.
You could still take the 3.
And then you could carry over 5. You carry over 5 to the next year. And if you break even, then you take 3,000 next year, and then the next year you carry over the final 2,000.
Correct. That's the way that works. Now, let's differentiate that from, let's say, operating loss. Let's say you run a business. You own a business and you generate a loss, and you had basis to take the loss. Well, under the old law, you could go back up to 2 years back and claim a refund.
Uh-huh.
So you'd amend the return. You'd actually take the loss. And I had a loss this year. Take it in the prior two. No more. So now they're saying you can't go backwards with the operating loss. You can go forward, but guess what? There's a catch to that now, too. You only can take up to 85% of
going forward.
So you're still going to pay. You're never going to wipe out your total liability with the operating loss.
Well, it's really, if you think about it, they went from 12 to 24, right, for the standard deduction
Couple. Correct.
Now, if you have kids, does it make any difference?
Yes.
So let's say you're a husband and wife with two children. What do you get then?
Well, you know, under the old law, you used to get up to, your exemptions were worth $4,050
right,
a piece,
right?
So if you had four, do the math.
It's, yeah,
16,000, whatever, $200. However, that's been eliminated under the new law, so you don't get to take any exemption money. So you say, well, my standard deduction went up $12,000. It went from 12 to 24.
Right.
Great. But if you had two kids and you and your wife, you've lost 16 on that side.
Yeah, yeah.
So you lost 16 from the exemptions. You picked up 12 on the standard, but you're still down 4. But the rates have come down, the bracket rates.
Four children, the brackets come down.
Yeah, and they increased the tax credit for kids. So now it's a $2,000 per child, where it was $1,000, the credit. It's actual credit. It's not even a deduction. It's a dollar-for-dollar offset.
Well, yeah. I remember a young lady that worked for me. She made $25,000 in the year and paid next to nothing in taxes. But she got $8,000 back because she had three kids.
Yeah. Well, you can. Well, some of them.
But she didn't get it back because she never paid it in. But it was.
Well, there's some things called refundable tax credits, Joe.
Is that what they?
Refundable tax credits are credits that you get no matter, even if your tax liability is zero, the government will still pay you. Yeah, which is interesting.
I like the word they call it refundable, but that's a new word that doesn't compute.
No, they call it refundable, but it really isn't. It's literally not a refund.
Yeah,
a refundable
exactly.
Meaning you can get paid for it. They'll refund it to you. But you've never paid it in the first place. I don't know how you're getting a refund.
Well, you see, in the securities business, a refund is not necessarily a refund.
Ah, well.
Because we can refund a bond issue. Mm. Means we start over again.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
I heard that term.
That's English for you, right? They can use the same exact words that have two totally different meanings, and one has nothing to do with the other. And that just, I feel sorry for people. You think other languages are tough? Mm. Boy, oh boy, how many words do we have that could have three and four different meanings?
So refundable means you'll get the money even if you don't have any tax due.
Nice.
Or any tax period.
So this year, Let's take that same young woman, single mom, three kids, makes $25,000.
Mm-hmm.
She's going to have no tax. Right.
Right.
And she's going to get a check.
And her income is that low, she'd get something golden earned income credit.
And so she's going to get $6,000 or $8,000, $10,000. How much would it be, roughly?
I think $6,600 or $6,500, I believe.
Total for the three?
Total, yeah.
Okay.
Well, maybe it might be a little more for the third. I'd have to emphasize.
Because when I think about last year, it's pretty much the same dollar amount based on the example I'm giving you.
Yeah, they increased it a little bit, Joe. Yeah. But yeah, it'd be about six.
Okay, another subject. Here we go again. Now I'm an old person, which I am. Mm-hmm. In fact, all of us are.
Not me.
Yeah. You just look old. That's old. So now I don't look old. I'm retired.
Yeah.
And I don't have an income, but I have Social Security income.
Right.
And let's just say I'm getting, between my wife and I, $3,000 a month or $36,000 a year in Social Security income.
Mm-hmm.
And let's just say I have another $3,000 a month, $36,000 more, in investment income.
Right.
So now I've got a total of $72,000 coming into our house.
Mm-hmm.
Taxes.
Well, on the taxes, there's a special calculation that's done with respect to Social Security. If that was your only income,
yeah,
you had nothing else,
yeah,
there's no tax due. You don't even have to file it.
But I got $36,000.
But now you got the $36,000 in investment. So the way it works, Joe, is you take half your Social Security.
Okay.
In this case, $18,000.
Right.
Add it to your
36.
To your 36, and what do you come up with?
Lots.
Yeah.
40. What is that?
45.
Okay. Thank you. We needed some help.
Yeah, we need that. So now it's 45.
We don't have a calculator with it.
So you back off of that. What's equivalent to the standard deduction? So if you
get $24,000 off of that.
No, it's 30. It's 30. Roughly 30. $32,000 or $33,000
off of that,
off the 48.
Yeah.
So that means $15,000.
16 left to be subject to tax. No, that's the standard deduction.
No, that's what is the taxable portion of your Social Security under that scenario.
Okay. So what happens is, I'm doing the math in my head and I lost it.
You had $36,000 Social Security.
Right.
You're saying $15,000 of it would be taxable. The rest of it wouldn't.
Okay. So $15,000 of it's taxable. And I got $36,000 plus the $15,000, $35,000, $45,000.
No, you'd have $36,000 plus the $15,000, you'd be $51,000, right?
Yeah.
$51,000. So that's your income less your standard deduction.
Which
would be
$12,000.
If they're married, it's $24,000. If they're single, it's $12,000.
So
let's assume
you're
married.
Are you doing the math?
Yeah.
So is it single or married?
Married.
Let's say married. Okay, so then it'll be $24,000 would come off the $51,000.
24 come off to 51, so now I'm down to
27,000.
I got 27 left over subject to tax, right?
Right.
Do I have deductions I can take from there?
If you're itemized, no, remember, we took a standard deduction of 24. If you have more than $24,000 of itemized deductions, then yeah, you'd go with that. It would be more, but if you don't, you go with the
24. I've got $27,000 worth of taxable income, let's just say using standard short form. And what am I going to pay?
I think roughly 12% or something, 13%.
12% of that?
Yeah.
So okay. Around 3,000 then.
Pretty close to $3,000. Does that sound right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm just trying to look for differences from what used to be. There was a time when they didn't take 50% of your Social Security. They took 85% for a while.
Well, they caps at 85%.
Yeah.
Depending on your, depending on the way the calculation works out.
Yeah. So, but I know that I've had clients of mine that were putting $50,000 a year in their pocket. This was not this last year, but that were paying not a dime in tax with Social Security and investment income because of deductions.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But all of a sudden, if they started going over that 50, all of a sudden you start creeping into that paycheck.
Yeah, but it caps depending on your income. It could be either 50% taxable or 85% taxable.
Gotcha.
Depends on what that swing is. That's the way that works.
888-221-8990. Anybody curious about what's happening on taxes? Today's a good day because Vince Rizzino, CPA, is sitting here. Joe Martek, financial advisor, is sitting here. Retired prosecuting attorney, barrel runner over from Wisconsin, is here.
Can the barrel runner over bring a new subject in?
I guess you're going to.
met a young lady yesterday who was hired by a married couple to take care of 92-year-old grandpa. And she was telling me that he had to go in the hospital, and she made some decisions. And I said,
expand on that. Just, you said she made some decisions. Expand on that for a minute.
She made some decisions involving the 92-year-old's health in the hospital, care.
The hospital asked for.
Right.
And she made the decision.
So I said, oh, you're her. You're the health power of you're the health surrogate, having a health power of attorney. And she said no. And I said, the family that hired you, they have it? No. And that can be a critical liability problem, and we talked about that. That is a serious misstep.
Well, there's two things that happen. Number one, hopefully she's young and doesn't have a nickel to her name, and they could sue her until she's blue in the face and there's not collectible, and she'd have to go bankrupt, which is unfortunate, but let's just say that. If the family sued her because she made a decision she wasn't qualified to make, and then hospital would get sued, everybody would get sued. Attorneys are looking for collectability at this point. Second part is monetary liability for hospital care. In the state of Florida, you're not responsible for the bills of anybody that you don't sign for. But, you know, normally you check somebody in a hospital. Like if I'm taking a child or you or anybody, they want you to sign papers to admit you. Well, if you ever read those three pages of fine print, you'd realize you're signing your life away saying you're financially responsible for the debt that may incur. So you have to
be. Most people are emotional at that point, having somebody that's sick requires hospitalization, so you probably don't even think about it.
You got to
sign the papers, get them in.
When you walk in and they say this, no, let them die, the heck with them.
Right.
No, that's against the rules. But what I'm trying to say is you just have to be extremely careful. And what he was trying to counsel this young lady, saying, look, go back to the family. If you're going to stay employed, get a health care surrogate. Find somebody that has the qualification to be, which would be a blood relative, which could be a spouse or a child. Let's just say there's a husband and wife and they're both out to lunch. Neither one could give authority. Then it would fall to the children. And this is best. Now, here comes Joe Martek talking, and Vince Rizzino and Alan, retired attorney. Don't do this yourself. You should, in my not too humble opinion, and I mean that, not too humble opinion, you should go to an attorney and make sure this is done legally properly, because this could affect your life for many, many years.
Right. Yes, this is exactly what I told her. But one thing, Joe, you might get into a situation like, as an example, I have no family down here in Florida, but I meet somebody who...
You mean you actually have family?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
On the other coast with Gavin Newsom.
Do they teach in the synagogue?
Yes, they do.
There's a joke here. I'm not going to bring it up again.
No. I know the audience would like some seriousness today, which
whether they want it or not, they're going to get it, right? Go ahead.
But say, in a situation like me, I have no family here in Florida, but I meet a person who's a certified healthcare person. That person, if I would so choose, can be my health surrogate.
They don't have to be certified either, though. They can be anybody.
But
listen, Alan, guess you what? You just let me be your power of attorney and healthcare surrogate, and trust me.
Joe, with your sense of humor, I would rather have Vince do that, if you don't mind.
Thank you, Alan.
Cut me to the quick.
Thank you, Alan.
Well, and this is not a fun. It is funny, but it's not. The key thing is when you designate a power of attorney or a health care surrogate, this is a serious thing.
That is very serious.
And because it could be life and death, and it could also be economic.
Absolutely.
When I had an old lady that I took care of for 10 years, and... as my wife said, please don't bring home another, but it was one of those weird things. You knock on a door and now you're stuck. You know, how are you going to do? There's no family, there's no nobody, so you inherit. Well, what happened is over a period of time, she was in an assisted living and they evicted her. It wasn't assisted living, it was independent living, because her time was starting to go. So the next place wouldn't take her without a power of attorney. Somebody had to have power of attorney. So I said, look, they won't take you unless we get a power of attorney. And she says, well, you'll do it, won't you? And I said, she says, you'll take care of me, won't you? And I said, well, I have been. She goes, well, okay, well, then you do it. And I said, now, listen, you know what a power of attorney means? And she goes, yeah, it means you'll take care of me. I said, no, no, no. It does not mean I'll take care of you. It means that everything that is yours is mine. And she said, no problem. Will you take care of me? I said, well, of course I've taken care of you, but you just have to understand there's limited power of attorney, there's durable, there's limited, there's all kinds of categories, and you need somebody that's a professional, in my opinion, to make sure that you understand what authority you're giving to that person.
And right. I second what you just said 1,000%.
Yep.
You need to see a competent attorney to not only do your health care, but your power of attorney, your will, or your trust.
All the rest of that stuff.
Everything. And we've talked on the show before of stars that have died without a will. Aretha Franklin comes to mind as the latest one.
And James Gandolfini.
Yeah.
How about Howard Hughes?
Yeah, well, that's
a famous one.
I mean, here's a guy who's been dead for over 50 years and is still not settled. Elvis, I mean, it was.
And he's still making money. The estate is still making money.
Well, the attorneys make a fortune over these people that don't have, you know, because the state comes in and says, okay, fine. And then their illegitimate son, Joe Martek, keeps showing up saying, and my dad, you know. Well,
Joe shows up at all these things. He lives over there by the courthouse.
Listen, why do you know I don't work? You know, but the key is kind of funny, but it's not, because there are many, many thieves out there, many dishonest, disreputable people. So here comes again. Do this thing right. And I've had numerous people say it, and Vince, I know you'd have it, Alan. They'll say, well, can't I just go to the office supply store? I said, yeah, but it may not be a legal document. Now, it doesn't make any difference. So you save $200 or $300 or $500 or $1,000, whatever the number might be, depends how complicated. But in the long run, it may end up costing $100,000 or tens of thousands.
Yeah, because those are standard forms.
Yeah.
It's like one size fits all, but it doesn't fit all.
See, every state has its own laws and its own requirements. So it's a difficult procedure when you're going through the court system. The courts don't care about your feelings. They care about the I's and the T's and making sure everything is crossed and dotted and done properly. Otherwise, the court system drags it out.
Particularly important talking about wills.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those people who are just moving into the state of Florida mm-hmm. and now mm-hmm. become residents of mm-hmm. Florida, you really should see a lawyer about updating your wills. Why? Because that will that you took out, say, in from Minnesota or New York
or
may not be valid.
So you just, if it may be okay, but you don't know you don't until know. You talk you to somebody. Have.
I had a case where the will was a photocopy.
Oh,
not even an original, a photocopy.
See, in Florida, if you don't have an original, you don't have one.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, there's case after case after case. So people, I don't have the original. Well, where do you think it is? Well, it could be at the attorney.
Probably the attorney who drew it up, you know?
The attorney died.
That's right. In most cases.
And that, hey, I did it 40 years ago.
Exactly.
Well, you know, you have a responsibility. You just can't put your head in the sand on stuff like this to do these things. You know, I if Greg Vasula was sitting here, I'd pick on him unmercifully right now, because here's one of the rules if we look at it. If you have, let's say, a $1 million probatable estate. Now, what's probatable means? That means subject to the courts.
Now, and why would it be subject to the courts, Joe? You should explain that.
Well, if it's your homestead real estate, that can pass to your heirs without going through probate. If you have a bank account that has transfer on death, that's not subject to probate. If you have annuity contracts, they have beneficiaries, not subject to probate. If you have life insurance, you have named beneficiaries, not subject to probate. But let's say you
IRAs,
have
IRAs, not subject to probate. Roth IRAs, not subject to probate. So if you don't designate a beneficiary, or it's not your homestead,
right,
it's likely to be probatable.
So now we've got rental property, income property. Say you own a couple of rental houses. Those are mm-hmm. going to be subject to probate. So what happens is, how do you avoid probate? You have a trust. Okay. So let's just say you've got this $1 million that's a subject to probate, and you die. And you go to an attorney, your kids do. The attorney, first thing he does is grin and then rubs his hands together, because the state of Florida says a usual fee is 3% of the value of the estate. And that's only $30,000. Then you want to know how long it's going to take. The odds are extremely good it won't be less than 6 months. And it could be longer, because you have to notify, creditors have an opportunity to come in and put a claim, etc. But if that was in a trust, there is no probate.
That's right.
Just that simple.
Because the trust document would dictate what happens to the assets.
The trust has all the rights.
And it's honored by the courts.
Yep.
That's a legal document.
All the rights and authorities of a person that's still alive, and a trust stays alive until there's no money in it. When it has no more assets, it's gone. Anyway, these are important things that if we're talking about today, whether it's you or somebody else, just don't take these things for granted. There's circumstances that come up constantly. It's always somebody else. It's never me, right?
Right.
But we read the paper every day, or we see it's that people are getting killed, getting accidents, getting hurt. Always something is happening.
And it's not just the money, Joe, as you pointed out. Probate could take 6 months.
And,
it could take 9 months. So your heirs have to wait.
And that's if there's no contest.
Right. And if there's no contest. Exactly.
Contest means your illegitimate son, Joe Martek, didn't show up again. And say, hey, that was my dad. I want my share.
That's right.
And then all of a sudden, and now we're taking 9 months or a year because now we got to prove blood tests, et cetera, am I a legitimate heir? I mean, it's all kind. I mean, I've seen people pay people off just so they didn't have to go through the court system. Mm. You know, I mean, it just happens. 1-888, by the way, you don't have to dial the one if you got a cell phone. 888-221-8990. Toll free from anybody. Any place.
Any place.
888-221-8990. We got Vince Rosino, CPA. We've got Alan Love, retired attorney, Joe Martek, financial advisor. We're looking for any questions you might have that we can help you with. And it doesn't have to be what we're talking about right now. Again, understand that we're a blessed group. You've got a group of local professionals that have been around a long time with integrity, with experience. And our job is to help people. And we're very fortunate as a group that we've been able to help people. And none of us... As an example, if we talk to anybody, we don't charge you to talk, period. If you hire us to do something, that's a different story. We all have to make a living. I mean, I have ex-wives, you know, I can't afford to eat, you know, without getting paid. It's amazing how that works. Let's take a call.
Beautiful.
Caller, it's Joe Martek. You're on the radio.
Yes, I had a tax question. I just heard you guys were going over a lot of different information about that. But I recently had acquired my kids back into my life. They moved from Georgia, came back to live with me. I have three of them. I was working most of this year. Didn't really make a whole lot of money, but I just wanted to see what the best angle would be. I'm still technically married to my ex-wife, but I have all of the kids with me. What should I do about that?
Well, you're still technically married. That means that you're filing separate returns, I take it, from your wife?
Yes.
Okay. Well, then the children, you really should have an agreement with your wife as to who's going to be taking the deduction, or I should say who's going to claim them. But remember, under the new tax law, you're not getting any exemptions for the kids.
However,
you do get child credit.
Earn credit, which could make a big difference.
Could be a $2,000 per child.
Yeah. Well, here... Do you have legal custody? Does she have? If you're still married, you guys have not filed for divorce?
Correct. It's not. Nothing's official. Nothing is ordered where anybody has
so right now, legal custody. Is your wife working?
No.
Okay. So here's the situation. She probably does not care about the tax deduction for the children, but she may care about the tax credit.
Absolutely. The credits are important because they might be refundable.
That could be $15,000 or no.
No, $2,000 per child.
$6,000.
So, mm-hmm.
Meaning she could get a tax refund of $6,000 without paying a dime in if she knew about that. You understand what we're saying?
Right.
So you have what's called legal custody or assumed custody. If I was you, first thing I'd do is said, okay, honey, baby doll, I'm not mad at you anymore. Sign this piece of paper that says... Yeah. You are now the legal custodian of these children in Florida.
Yes, because without it, she can challenge it, or worse than that, she
I'm working on that, but now here we are in January anyway, so...
Well, you got time.
You got time. You're not going to file till April.
But the key is, and I've seen this before, caller, where the spouse might be filing a separate return and claim the kids themselves.
Yeah.
And so, therefore, you've got a double, and your return will get kicked.
What you want to do is just call her up and try to be as nice as you can and say, listen, I've got the kids... Did you have them for last year, for 2018?
Not complete year, no.
Okay. makes no difference. If she's willing to let you claim the kids, you should just have a piece of paper that says, hey, the kids are with me. Can you sign a piece of paper that said the children live me with me for 2018?
And you agree not to claim them yourself.
And you agree not to claim them for a tax return. Now, if you had that piece of paper, because down the road, she could come back if you don't have that, and you could all of a sudden have a monster problem with the IRS. So it's worth asking her, and I don't know how you can do this gently, or maybe you've got a relative that can talk to her that she doesn't. I'm assuming she doesn't like you too much at this point.
Not particularly.
Hey, I was just picking on you a little bit, you know that. But the bottom line, I'm trying to, she may not be communicative with you, but you might have a relative that can say, hey, he's got the kids and he needs to file a tax return. Can you sign a paper that says the children are with him and he gets whatever the tax
is? And you're supporting them, I assume, Cole, right?
Yes.
Okay, you have more than half to
support. She's not sending you any money.
No.
Okay. Yeah, it's worth a try. And if she agrees to it, you just you might want to call us back, and it wouldn't even hurt to have an attorney draft that thing. Might cost you $100, and I hate to do that to an attorney and tell them that's all they're going to charge. But the bottom line is, we would help you.
Right.
All righty.
Okay. Sounds good.
Good luck, my man. Let us know how it works out, and we'll help you.
Yes. Thank you, caller.
Bye. All right, well, thanks.
Bye.
Okay. Bye. Bye.
You know, there's a, hey.
This is a real life situation.
It's a real life.
If there is a divorce situation, there is an actual form that you have to file with your tax return.
But if you're not divorced, you're staying married and he's got the kids and she's up, you know, if she knew she's got $1,500, $2,000, $6,000.
$6,000,
She may just say, hey, baby, what kids? Let's take another caller here. Caller, it's Joe Martek. You're on the radio.
Yes, good afternoon.
Afternoon.
I'm listening earlier on your comments regarding the wills and trusts.
Right.
My question is there a particular value of you stated, you mentioned something about the value of the property and putting it under a trust, but is there a specific amount before considering putting something into a trust, for example?
No. But let's
just mention $1 million.
No, Lord. I'm talking, I'm whistling Dixie thinking I'm going to die and leave $1 million, which, forget that part. That was just an example. But let's say you have a house that's worth $50,000 or $100,000 and it's a rental property, and you die, that house would be subject to probates, the courts, even if you had a will, unless it was in a trust. So very often, certain things are not, you're not able to put a document with them except a trust, so that can pass without going through the court system. And the best example in the world is rental or income properties.
Yeah, you see, an example, caller, is even if it was, say, $5,000, you wouldn't want to wait six months to get the money.
Yeah.
And if it's not in a trust, then it would have to be probated.
I mean, I saw a family down in Palm Beach County, that husband and wife, and he bought properties only in his name, not being vicious, didn't even think about it. Nobody advised him. They had like 6 or 8 rental properties. So he dies. Okay. All of a sudden, they had children by, each one had children by marriage. She had to sell the properties. She was only entitled to 30%. His kids got the rest of it, though that was all done during their marriage.
Exactly.
Because they made a mistake.
Wow.
So, believe you me, these are things that you need to counsel a professional with to make sure, because, you know, we never know when it's our turn to leave this world, and all we're doing is for other people, not for us, but, you know, that's our blood, so most of us want to make sure we do the right thing.
It's worth the investment up front to do this trust.
Yes.
Especially if you have varying assets like rental properties or other things that might be probatable and get caught up in the courts.
Well, you might remember we talked earlier, if you listen, if you have a bank account, checking account, savings account, CD, make sure your bank has what's called a TOD, transfer on death agreement, signed by you and says, hey, I'm dead. It goes to my husband. It goes to my kids. It goes to whoever you want. That's not subject to probate. Retirement accounts are not subject to probate, which means a 401k or an IRA, because you have named beneficiaries. Annuities are not subject, named beneficiaries. Life insurance is not subject, named beneficiaries. Brokerage accounts, I'm a stockbroker. If you had an account with me, I would make sure you have a transfer on death agreement there in case you died, and it would go to your kids or whoever you designate. Those are not subject to probate. It's almost impossible. I've never found a way to transfer income properties without going through a trust.
And the worst thing you could do is not designate a beneficiary. I've had that
That's
case.
The worst thing.
Because if you die, and you say you're the surviving spouse, and you die, and there's an IRA out there that there's no designated beneficiary, guess who, where it goes? It goes into the estate.
It's really a
and
problem.
And the estate has to pay tax on it.
I had a client just
recently. At a higher rate, by the way, than individuals.
She's a widow with no children. And she doesn't really have anybody close. And it was a sizable amount of money. And I said, okay, let's assume you drop dead right this minute after you give me that check. Who gets it? She goes, do I have to do that? And I said, okay, you want it to go through the courts because you have nobody? She goes, no. And I said, pick a name. You can change your mind 10 times, 100 times, but right today, assume you drop dead today. What do you want it to do? Well, I called her sister up and says, guess what? If I drop dead today, you're getting some money.
I don't know if you want to announce that necessarily.
Well, sister says, are you really gonna though? You know, no, that was not what she said, you know, but what I'm trying to say is you have to look at these things that it's always somebody else, but you know, when it's your turn, you don't know when that's
good advice is to look at all your investments, your IRAs, your 401k
make
plan,
sure it's all
and
done.
Make sure that you have up to date beneficiaries on file. The named beneficiaries. Yeah. It's crucial.
So would that be said, does the same apply, for example, if you don't have a property but you're in your primary home, and let's just say, what would be the best course of action if you have other children and you want to ensure that
your primary residence, just a will.
And there is a court filing required,
but it's
not probate. It's just that you have to file a form that...
they want to make sure you really are dead.
Yeah,
you know, because if your kids say, I'm taking the house, Ma, goodbye, kicking you on the street, you know, they want to make sure you are dead and that the kids are going to inherit it. So a will...
will is the first line of defense in that case, and the second would be a trust. Not everybody needs a trust.
No, on your primary residence, once you've homesteaded it, you made it your homestead and you filed it, then it's not subject to probate. Hey, the key is this: it may not be subject to probate, but if you don't write down on a will who gets the house, who gets to sell it. Say you have three kids, and I've had this happen. Some parents will say, hey, this one kid gets nothing because I've already given them their inheritance ahead of time. We're going to split it between the other two. You know, and that happens. So, and remember this, until the day you die, you can change your mind on these documents and amend them until the day you die.
Okay. And my last question is, whoever does inherit it from that trust, is it then, or I should say inherit the proceeds from that trust, is it tax?
Inheritances generally, now we're talking generally, are not taxable to the legatees. However, if there is embedded in there an IRA, for example, in other words, money that wasn't previously taxed, then the person who gets the money, the beneficiary, would wind up with that tax obligation.
However,
because the government does want their money.
Stay with the obligation is the magic word. So let's say you die and you're 70 and your kids are 50. And you have not started taking money out of your IRA. They inherit the IRA and there's no tax until they take money out. When they take it out, it's going to be subject to ordinary income. Okay?
Okay.
Now, one more thing. What's the exemption today on inheritance tax?
It's $11 million and change.
So what happens? You can die and leave $11 million today and there's no inheritance tax.
Yeah.
Now, if you've got more than $11 million, I want to meet you in person because I hope you're single because I want to get married.
Wait a minute. But if there's $1 million IRA embedded, there is tax on the
using the word embedded, meaning if money has never been taxed. Meaning an IRA or 401k or 403b, pick all these letters and names that you did these for retirement accounts, and you die, whoever inherits them when they take the money out, they're going to have to pay tax or subject to tax when they take it.
And Joe, you alluded to it before, but there are different rules depending on whether the person who died was taking their normal distributions or they just hadn't yet started.
Just
there's different rules.
But the bottom line is when they take the cash and put it in their pocket, at that rate, whatever it is, they're going to pay tax on it at that time, or subject to tax.
Subject to tax. Anything outside of that would not be taxable.
So you can leave $11 million, and I love you if you have that much.
Up to $11 million. If you have $11 million, yeah, Joe will be knocking.
Listen, if you pay $12 million, we don't mind paying tax on the $1 million. We get to keep the $11 million, right? That's the way the tax law works today.
Right.
And by the way, it's portable between husband and wife. So if you're married,
you can go back and forth.
No, if you don't use your personal $11 million, the difference goes to your spouse.
Are you married?
Yes.
That's too bad because you got $11 million. I was hoping you weren't. Anyway, listen, I hope we helped you. Anytime you need us, you call us, okay?
Will do. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Thank you, Cole.
Well, it's an interesting thing how this whole thing works out. And, you know, a lot of stuff, Vince, we take this for granted because we do it every day. But I will tell you, how many times do we see people make mistakes on this, which they didn't need to because they weren't given proper advice?
You're absolutely right. And because, you know, the old saying, you don't know what you don't know, Joe.
Hey.
And that's what it is. When you're ignorant, and that's not a derogative, that's not a bad word. Ignorant is you're just lacking knowledge.
You haven't learned. And the other saying is, if you don't know, it won't hurt you. That's not true.
That is not true.
No, not true.
It may not hurt you if you're dead, but boy, you can hurt a lot of other people.
And believe me, I've had clients tell me who don't want to do proper planning, hey, that's my heir's problem.
That's their problem.
Well, I'm dead.
Then you kind of counsel people and say, listen, hold still for a minute, because let's if you like your kids, I don't like them at all, but don't leave them the money. Leave it to the church then. Call us, Joe Martek. You're on the radio.
Hello, Joe. Hi.
Hi.
My name is Arlene. Hi. First of all, just want to thank you for assisting all of us listeners. And part of my question, I think, was answered with the last caller, but I want to be really clear. Homestead property, as long as it's in a will, you do not have to have a living revocable trust or anything like that, correct?
Even if it's not in a will, you don't have to have it. It's not subject to probate. However, if it's going to pass to somebody without a will, it is more difficult. So the sister, what we're looking at, a homestead is not, here's another couple things that are important. A homestead is also not subject to attachment by creditors. What's that mean? You get sued for $10 million because you're Allen and you run over a bumper out there and the city sues you and you don't have the $10 million. They can take everything you've got except your homestead. That's not subject to attachment by creditors. So literally, when you're going through this, number one thing is a will. So when you die, that home is going to go to whoever you want. And it will not go through probate. It just simply has to go through a simple procedure that says you really are dead. The kids aren't stealing the house. They've got to show a death certificate and do a filing with the courts, which is pretty easy to do.
However, if there's no will, you got to prove your lineage, blood relative. So yeah, will is the first line.
Will is the first line. And that's a pretty simple, easy thing to do.
Okay.
And by the way, if you don't have a will, when you do a will, you should also do the following documents: a power of attorney. We talked a little bit about that. A healthcare surrogate, which means who can make decisions for you in the hospital to cut you open, not cut you open, or do whatever. And another one is called a living will, which means unplug me after a day or a week or a month, you know, or just let me die right away, and that's your desires, because nobody wants to be the one that's in charge of that. So when you go to a normal attorney, let's just say he's competent, he's going to put all those documents together in one package.
Okay. All right. Very good. Do you have any idea of what each attorney, or generally the cost that an attorney should be charging?
I'm going to give you a general, and they're all going to hate me. See, attorneys hate this because it depends on the complexity, how many assets you have. Let's say you had 20 or 30 properties. The figure I'm going to give you right now has nothing to do with that because that's a lot more work. Attorneys get paid by the hour. But let's just put it this way. Under most circumstances, a simple will, based on the documents I gave you, should be under $1,000 and might be close to $500 or $600.
Okay.
So what you have to do, if I was shopping attorneys, where do you live?
In Fort Pierce.
Okay, good. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give your name and number to Greg Fasula. You'll talk to him on the phone, and you can. Here's what people are afraid to do, and that's to ask professionals, what do you charge? Don't be afraid of that. Just say, hey, look, what do you charge? And Greg is first going to say, nothing when I first talk to you. Once I talk to you and you decide to hire me based on the information you gave me, this is what it's going to cost you.
Okay, very good. Very
so
good. Thank you.
Don't ever be shy about asking that. Yeah.
Okay. The other thing is that I do have a piece of investment property as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that I should be putting in a living trust.
If I was you now, all of a sudden, forget this will. You now have a trust plus the power of attorney plus the health care surrogate plus the living will. The trust basically overtakes the will. Oftentimes, they have what's called a pour-over will, that part of the trust which encompasses other stuff. But literally, yes, if you've got investment property, you might as well just have a trust.
Okay, very good. I also have another question. My husband is a disabled veteran. And in 2018, he started receiving financial assistance due to his disability. Do that income that he's received, must that be included in our tax returns?
Disability payments?
Yeah.
It depends. Now, what kind of a policy is this? Was this a private policy? Was it
No.
Government.
It's government?
It's from the government, yes.
Is it? Yes. The answer is yes, it is taxable income.
It may be subject to tax.
Subject to tax. Most of them are subject to tax. The only time that I've seen it where it wasn't was, again, if you had a private policy that you've been paying premiums on all your life and then you have to collapse.
Now, stay with the word subject. You may not have enough total income to pay any tax, but you have to report it because you're going to get a 1099 from the government, so it has to go on the tax return.
Correct.
Okay.
That's what it means by subject.
Subject. Doesn't mean you'll pay tax
because you don't know what the rest of your return looks like.
Yeah. Got it?
Yes, I do. And I have one last question.
Okay.
I am looking for some guidance from financial advisors. And I've talked to a couple, and they seem to each have a different path. I'm wondering, because we probably have like $2.5 million, I'm just kind of wondering what resource should I go to really.
Joe Martek, you're speaking to here, is a financial advisor. Kind of a coincidence that you bring that up. Let me just talk to you off the air, and we'll set up a time to meet and not make a decision. My job is to counsel and try to make sure we accomplish your goals. And unfortunately, we got 30 seconds left, so I'm going to have to say goodbye. But you left your name and number with Pastor Jonathan, and I'll give you a call, and we'll set up a time, and we'll meet and see if we can accomplish your goal.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you guys.
Thank you so much for calling, caller. And we got 10 seconds left, Vince, so say goodbye.
Say goodbye.
Hey,
God bless you.
Say goodbye. Hey, Joe Martek, say goodbye. Goodbye, Joe Martek.
You've been listening to the Team Martek program. The Team Martek program is a paid program. The content was provided by HF Martek. WCNO, its staff, management, and ownership were not responsible for its content. Investment involves risk. Prior to making any investment, an investor should meet suitability requirements. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future performance. Neither the opinions expressed nor the information provided constitutes a recommendation to purchase or provide investment advice. The material presented is not a substitute for obtaining professional advice from a qualified person or firm. Securities offered through Centaurus Financial, member FINRA and SIPC, and Michael Paulus with East Coast Mortgage Lenders, NMLS number 353429. Tune in next Wednesday at 4 p.m. for the Team Martek program here on WCNO 89.9 FM. For more information, Team Martech is available at 772-678-7725.